This has been a strange time in everybody's life. And things are, amazing things are happening. I want to talk about hard times in two different ways, two different kinds of hard times. And the first one is when life just is the way it is, and you sort of receive it and deal with it. You didn't invite the hard times, the hard times invited you. And we all know those. And because you're you people, you've been taught 500 times that you should get counseling or talk to a friend or cry or whatever. So I don't need to tell you those things, but that doesn't mean they're not important. They are important, and it's crucial, really, that in the hard times you cry and feel what you feel and express your feelings and your pain to other people. All of that, it's crucial. I know you've been doing that through these days, and I know you've been doing it, I speak now for maybe not 100% of you, since the early days of November. That you've suffered, many of you have suffered, and the suffering continues right up until today. And that too is just the way life is. You didn't invite that, it came to you. You did your little part, came anyway. And I want to say that. Well, let me tell this little story. About 12 or 13 billion years ago, there was a huge explosion. And you and I, everything that's physical about us, were in that explosion. You remember that? It's been a long time. Nothing's been added since then to this universe. At that time, this is wondrous stuff. At that time, time and space were invented. They were invented in the Big Bang. And you say, well, what was before? No, you can't talk about what was before. There was no time. Before is a time category. So it was a magnificent thing, a miraculous thing. And if you think I understand it, you really are gullible. Then the universe expanded and expanded and is still expanding. And in the midst of that, after a while, galaxies were invented. And if you've seen those Hubble telescope pictures, then you know it's like they're like snowflakes across the sky. They've estimated now that there are at least a billion galaxies, a billion. When I was a kid, we thought there was only one, or maybe that other one that we could barely see on a dark night. But now we know there are billions. And in every one of those billion galaxies, there are billions of stars. And in around those billions and billions of stars, there are planets. And in the Milky Way galaxy, they tell me now that there are probably 5,000 Goldilocks planets. Planets that are not too hot and not too cold and would support life like we have here. So you can take that 5,000 in the Milky Way and then add that by a billion galaxies. You see, there are people, living creatures, intelligent creatures, all kinds of things scattered all over this universe. And then there's us. We made it. We not only were in the Big Bang, but we made it onto this beautiful little blue planet. We made it. Now, that's why I had them saying it's a wonderful, wonderful world. Isn't that right? That you made it. Not only did we make it onto this little planet, which, by the way, we are astronauts. Did you know? Do you think that? We ask people, are you an astronaut? We are all astronauts. We are flying through space and have been, you know, since we were born, and even 9 months before. So that's incredible. And that's what I fall back on. That I have my chance to be a part of this enormous enterprise called this universe. And it's a wonderful, glorious place to be. And it's a glorious, wonderful thing to know it, to be aware. My dog, your dog, I don't have a dog. Your dog is here for it, but I don't think he gets the full understanding of the billion galaxies and the million, trillions and trillions and trillions of stars and more planets, and it's all here. And we, on this little tiny thing, we are part of it. So when things really get hard, that's something to remember. You are privileged. You have a little bit of time, precious little, to be here, be a part of that momentous enterprise. And guess what? If Einstein is right, everything you do, every little dent you make, touches the entire thing. He said, or was supposed to have said, or should have said, that if a leaf falls in your backyard, the furthest galaxy is different. Now think about your life. So not only were you in the original explosion, your indentation of your ears will be still there. When it all comes to an end, which they say someday it will contract and maybe vanish. So I think that these times in our country, these times in this church, this fellowship, difficult times, but it's a time for which you can be grateful that you are here, that you have a chance to participate, that you have a chance to do your little part. And what I want to do, I'll tell you what I'm doing, because I'm old, you can see, and I have to take care of myself, so every day I'm out on the Swamp Rabbit Trail or somewhere getting at least an hour of exercise. I'm doing that, and I also am very bright and a good Unitarian kind of person. I'm vegetarian. I don't eat pigs or cows. I prefer broccoli. And the reason that I'm trying to live a little bit longer is because I want to see, don't you? I want to see how this plays out. I want to find out if our country has a central integrity about it, if it has that. So I want to live to see, at least, until I can kind of see, feel good about it. So that's good. That's one way to deal with the hard times that come and they come. To remember, this is a wonderful world. We don't have to wait for someone pie in the sky. We've got it here. Jesus said, "This is the kingdom of God." That's a good thing if you can relate to Jesus a little bit. And you don't have to wait to be born again in some other. So at the time, as maybe a queen or a king or something, you don't have to wait for that. We've got it already here. This is paradise. Yes, it is. You don't have to even wait for Godot. That's no longer necessary. So then the other way in which we have hard times, well, let me tell you a story. You remember King Arthur? You remember him personally or just in books? This happened. And again, I'd say I've heard it happened, and if it didn't happen, it should have happened. King Arthur is sitting around at the table with his knights of the round table, and he says to them, do you think you'd like to go on a quest for the Holy Grail? And they were men and women there. That story doesn't always include that. But would you like to go on a search for the Holy Grail? And of course they were eager. And then he said, well, this is what you do. You go outside of the walls of this castle. You walk outside of the safety of these walls. And you walk outside, cross the moat. And you cross the wall that goes out there near the forest. And then you look in the forest for the darkest place. And you begin your quest there. And in that forest, you will encounter dragons. That's certain. You will encounter dragons if you go into that forest. Some of the knights, I think, turned around before they even got to the forest. But many of them did, in fact, go into the forest and encounter the dragons. Now, they didn't have to do that. That wasn't just some that came to them. They decided to go into hard times. If you think you've had hard times, when you battle the dragons that are inside you and in the culture in which you live, that's hard times. So that's the kind of hard times that you volunteer for. You put your hand up when King Arthur says, "Does somebody want to do it?" So let me tell you now a little about my own journey. The good thing about telling about my own journey is I don't have to prepare for it. And when I finish, you'll say, "Well, he was right, he didn't prepare." I was born into Jim Crow. And I was in Jim Crow for the first 20 years of my life, for sure. My mother told me many times that the slaves were happy. My mother was a decent woman, a kind woman, and not cruel as far as I knew. But she had been told that, and people who told her, they had been told, because it was, when she was born, it was 60 years after the war. The slaves were happy, which by any slight measure of rational thought is absolutely impossible. Nobody wants to be cattle, livestock. And nobody wants to have their children jerked away and sold to somebody else when they're old enough to walk. Nobody. Nobody wants that. But she was inside the castle. She was inside the castle where it was safe and where everybody believed the way she believed and thought the way she thought. And so that's sad, isn't it? I want to say she lived and died in that illusion, in that false story, that lie, and therefore never went on a search for the Holy Grail, which translated into our language means she never was able to really live an authentic life. She didn't search for authenticity. She didn't try to rid herself of the lies and the lies and the lies and the cruelty and cruelty that had surrounded her all of her life. She did not fight that. She absorbed it as just true, and she relaxed and she took it easy, and she said the slaves were happy, and that made her feel better. So when I was about 20, I left the castle. I give thanks to the Methodist student movement in those days and the Student Christian Association in those days that were teaching people in college to think about this thing, to consider leaving the castle. So they were a blessing to me. I went to Clemson. I didn't learn anything at Clemson except to leave the castle. That's it. That's what I learned. And so I went out and I fought. And this is familiar, because many of you are on the same thing. You went out into the forest and fought the battle against racism. You had racism in yourself. You're born in this country. Of course, you have racism in yourself. But you fought against it. I had this experience early on when I left the castle. I was selling fuller brushes, a strange kind of forest, but a forest. And I stopped at this relatively large house. I was working in the northwest section of Atlanta where people had money. And so I went to this house, and as I walked up to the back door, two African-American men walked up beside me, sort of, just standing just below me. I was on the steps. And they said, "We're just looking to see if maybe," they didn't know I was a salesman. They didn't know. They said, "We're looking to see if there's any yard work we could do." Then the lady came to the door, and I said to her, "These boys are looking for work." You see, I remember that. That's been 50 years, and it still hurts. So it wasn't an easy battle with that dragon. I fell back many, many times accidentally. All that racism that was in my bloodstream kept bubbling up, you know. But I fought that, and you, almost everybody in this room had that kind of experience. You fought against racism. You tried to eradicate it in yourself. You tried to watch for signs that you still had it. And then a strange thing began to happen in me and in this culture. And I think Trump helps with that. I think Charlottesville helps with that. And I think many things that feed into that. But in these days, so it was not maybe a year or two ago that I went to this meeting in our community of African Americans. All were African Americans. We in the Nickeltown area generally. All were African Americans except Garnet and myself. And the police were there. It was a community police kind of conversation. It was good. It was fine. And this police officer was explaining that this is what you should do if a policeman stops you for a traffic violation. He said, "The first thing you should do is put down all of your windows. That's the first thing to do." And I didn't say anything. But what I said, what I thought, and what I know was that that doesn't apply to me. When a policeman comes to my car and sees my white skin, he is a gentleman perfect. He will say, "Mr. Elliott, can you not see your license?" And he will say, "Mr. Elliott," it's almost apologizing, "Mr. Elliott, seems like I'm going to have to give you a ticket. You were doing 85 in a 50-mile zone." And he'll write out the ticket and he'll give me, and he'll say, "Have a good day." Why should I put my windows down? My skin is white. I talked to a good friend of mine. That's quite a privilege, by the way. Think that's a privilege? To know that when a policeman comes to your car, you will get nothing damaging done to you. You will be treated with respect. Is that a privilege? I was talking to my friend, who was a district superintendent in another conference, and he supervises about 120 churches, something like that. How do you supervise 120 churches? Well, nothing's going on in those churches, so it's not so hard. But he said when he became a district superintendent, he being African American, he told all of his churches, "There will be no night meetings. We will have our meetings in the daytime on Saturday and Sunday, but we will not have night meetings." And he said he had just talked to a woman, African-American woman, who told him the same thing. She does not have night meetings because for an African-American to be in a dark road in the back country or in the South, especially in the South, maybe other places as well, that's dangerous. He said, "You could stop, you could have a breakdown, and you could go to a house to get help, and they'd just shoot you. You might just get shot because they think you're really dangerous." That would never happen to me. If I broke down, I'd walk to any house I wanted to. If That's privilege, isn't it? So that's what began to occur to me. And then I began to read some stuff. And then I learned, my goodness, the UUA is working on this very thing, inviting every congregation to deal with this issue, white supremacy. And I said, I had another dragon I had to deal with, that I've been living with that dragon relatively comfortably because I was doing some good things. I was trying to fight against my racism, but I was not even conscious. I hope you were better off at this than I was, but I was not conscious of the enormous advantage I had because of my skin color. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. This person said to me, when you look in the mirror, you see a man who has colluded with white supremacy his entire life. He has colluded, cooperated, and benefited from it for his entire life. So, I invite you, I've got to use up at least 20 more minutes, haven't I? I invite you to leave, if you've not gone into the forest, and if you've not yet become aware of this dragon, the dragon of white supremacy in this country, then I invite you out of the castle. There's a podcast called, the name of the podcast is Seen on Radio, S-C-E-N-E. And there's a podcast on that called Seeing White. I've listened to that, and that's the best thing I've heard to deal with this issue. I invite you, Seen on Radio, Seeing White. So I'm leaving that here. If you don't remember that and want to write it down, you can do that. So that's hard work. It's hard work. I want to read another poem by Maya Angelou, and then, believe it or not, I'm going to let you go see if you can get to the restaurant before the Baptist. This is a great, great poem of triumph among people who had to struggle hard. Still I rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? 'Cause I walk like I've got oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high, still I'll rise. Did you want to see me broken? Bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries. Does my haughtiness offend you? Don't you take it awful hard, 'cause I laugh like I've got gold mines digging in my own backyard. You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise. Does my sexiness upset you? Does it come as a surprise that I dance like I've got diamonds at the meeting of my thighs? Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from the past that's rooted in pain, I rise. I'm a black ocean, leaping and wide, welling and swelling, I bear in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak that's wondrously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the dream and the hope of the slaves. I rise, I rise, I rise.